Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Today is Tuesday, April 10th, 2018. And I'm excited for our annual show. Once a year, the Bill Barnwell Show has one episode dedicated to wrestling. Last year, it was going over every match The Undertaker performed in at WrestleMania. This year, a little more consistent, just a WrestleMania recap of the show we saw 2 days ago. Joining me to do that, our only wrestling correspondent. I would say lead, but there's no other backup wrestling correspondent. If he can't do it, we're not doing a show. It's the Los Angeles Times' Andy McCulloch. Andy, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. I finally finished watching the show 5 minutes before we did this. I started it 2 weeks ago. It was a great show. You know, it's been a really important fortnight for me catching up on every match on this card.
Did you prefer watching 23 Undertaker matches to one WrestleMania?
I think I would rather watch like Entourage than watch 23 Undertaker matches. Actually, I mean, I don't know. I liked the show. I thought the first half was really good, and then it like sort of fell apart, but it was not a bad show. I didn't, you know, I mean, basically every time I watch wrestling, I ask myself if I still like wrestling, and I think I still like wrestling.
Okay, so let me pull back the curtain a bit when it comes to my WrestleMania experience. I am currently in Europe. I was watching this show. I figured I'd start it because it started around midnight. I was in the UK. And so I figured, okay, I'll start the show at midnight, see how long I can stay up for. I set up for the first half of the show, and it was great. I mean, the point at which I stopped was after the Daniel Bryan match. And up to that point, the show had been pretty much an excellent show. And after that, I woke up, and suddenly I was very confused by what had happened in the ensuing 2 hours. And watching that, the ensuing 2 hours, knowing what people had said about those final 2 hours, definitely changed the way I viewed it. But I feel like it was looking to be maybe an all-time classic show and then just fell off of a cliff.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the conventional wisdom. I had a relatively similar experience. I was covering a Dodgers-Giants game. Was that who the Dodgers played? Yeah, they played the Giants on Sunday. And so I couldn't really watch the beginning, and I was sort of watching piecemeal after I finished writing. And so, like, I saw, you know, the Kurt Angle-Ronda Rousey match, which was great. I caught, you know, bits and pieces of Charlotte and Asuka, which was really good. And then I basically was flying all, you know, for a while. And by the time I got home, the show was over and everyone hated it. And I was kind of confused because it seemed like people on social media were really enjoying it. Then I got on a plane and everyone decided that, you know, wrestling's terrible again, which, you know, again, hard to argue objectively with that. It just seems like that, you know, it's really impossible to ask fans to watch like a 7 hour thing and come away happy. I don't understand why they do this outside of trying to give everyone a payday. It just seems like if you watch the NXT shows, like the NXT show on Saturday was great and it was 3 hours, which is long for an NXT show. They had like five matches. They were all pretty good. The main event was great. The opener was great. There was a really cool angle in the middle. It was a good, relatively tidy show. And I don't understand why they can't just do that for like their act on the main roster. I don't know why they have to do these, you know, marathons that like turn into like the Bataan Death March of, you know, wrestling watching.
You had to get Nicholas on the show. There's just no...
Nicholas needed a payday.
Nicholas needed that money. Did you give any thought to watching this in the press box during Dodgers Giants?
No, I'm very committed to my job, and I am always watching the baseball game, and I am never, ever watching live streams of poker or reading a book during the game. Never, ever.
Okay. Well, that's settled. There's a lot of talk that you were possibly watching poker live streams during baseball games, but fortunately we've proven that's not the case at this point.
Yeah. Completely unfounded rumor. Never happens.
Well, my promise to you is that we're not going to discuss baseball during this podcast. We're only going to discuss anything besides baseball. So let's get to the show. We'll go start to finish. Obviously, a lot of the dramatic stuff happened at the end, but I feel like the first half of the show was a lot of fun. And it started with a three-way match that I was not super excited about, but ended up being pretty good, which was Seth Rollins versus The Miz versus Finn Balor for the Intercontinental title, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and so it felt like it was sort of a weird match because I enjoyed it, but there was no face heel dynamic, right? Where you had Rollins, you had The Miz, who basically was acting like a babyface, and then you had Finn Balor, who was representing the entire LGBT community, apparently, as part of this match.
Right, right. And Seth Rollins was representing dorks who like Game of Thrones.
Yes. And like bad metal, apparently.
Yeah. Like he was basically dressed as a White Walker. Like he had the blue eyes and like, so, you know, that was strange. Like, I don't know if like that's gimmick infringement or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it was a nice match, you know. I think it's great, honestly, you know, that like the company that brought you like, you know, Gold Dust now has, you know, Finn Balor with the sort of the LGBT group from New Orleans. Like, I think that was legitimately a sign of progress, and his gear looked awesome. But I don't know, had they like sort of explained why that was happening, or is it just like, so, you know, something that Balor's doing now? I don't, like, I think it's great. It was kind of random for me. I don't know.
To my knowledge, like, they've not really given like a storyline expectation. It just seems like something he kind of took on his own to start doing.
Whatever, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah,
it seems like a weird thing to build an angle around, I guess. Like, this guy supports inclusion. It's like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
because then whoever he's facing, the implications that they don't support inclusion.
Right.
Which seems,
right.
Okay.
I don't know. It was nice. It was cool.
It was cool. But then when he came out, I was like, well, he's definitely winning this match. And then he did not win the match. It was Seth Rollins winning this match.
Yeah, it was okay. Rollins always seems like he's going to be better than he is. He still looks like he sort of runs underwater. I don't know if that's from the knee thing. He still looks a little bit slower. You know, but it was cool. I mean, I think one of the things that was interesting about this show is how basically, like, they clearly paid attention to what fans thought was going to happen. And in almost every match outside of, you know, the Daniel Bryan match and the Rousey match, they sort of went against the grain. You know, I think a lot of people expected Balor to win because Balor needs the title to, you know, to kind of be strong. Rollins is already made and Miz is thought to be leaving soon or taking a break soon. So they put the title on Rollins, which is fine. You know, Rollins is good. I think he's better as a heel than as a face, but it was a fun match and, you know, it was a good way to open the show.
Yeah, it did seem a little surprising to me and I believe, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it seems like the pre-match betting that happens in the UK on their online sites that is usually pretty accurate, pretty insightful in terms of who's actually going to win or lose, never really came in. A lot of the favorites in the pre-match betting actually ended up losing when it came to the real card itself. So it does seem like they were at least trying to subvert expectations somewhat with the finishes to most of the matches on the show.
Yeah, I think, do you think like they bet against, they bet like sort of on all the underdogs to get Nicholas's payday?
I would assume they have to finance the XFL 2.0 somehow, and so Vince McMahon is using his side project to put $500 a pop on some of these underdogs. I don't know.
God bless it.
If you're Vince McMahon, you're an actual, whatever, we'll say 800 millionaire, billionaire, whatever. I mean, it's still free money if you have control of the card to go make a couple $100 a show. Wouldn't you at least think about doing it?
I would have to think that's illegal, isn't it?
I mean, the idea that you're betting on pro wrestling shouldn't be legal under any circumstance.
Right. Like, so I guess, I mean, I assume the market is unregulated, right? I have no idea how this works. I mean, I know like you can't sports bet online in America for the most part, right? Since Black Friday. Yes. But it's just the whole thing seems so like below board to begin with that I guess they could do this. But I always assume too that that's how the lines change based on where the money comes in late, because that's when people who are in the know put money on the matches, right?
Yes. Exactly. But then when that money came in, or if it came in at all during this show, those people ended up losing. So maybe Vince is feeding them incorrect information. Who knows? The whole thing seems like, explaining it to someone who doesn't listen to watch wrestling, like people listen to this show, the fact that you can actually bet real money out of your pocket on a fake sport. It does seem a little crazy, but that's where we are in 2018.
Right.
During this match, Jonathan Coachman said, when you've been waiting all year, there's an advantage to being the first people out on the card. What does that mean?
Yeah, I like the coach. I've met him over the years. Very, very nice man. In my notes on the show, the only comment I had is, coach is not doing a great job. It's just like he was sort of like unenthusiastic. And like, I think Corey Graves is really good. Michael mm-hmm. Cole is obviously terrible, but that's sort of not his fault, a lot of people seem to think. Mm-hmm. And coach is just kind of like, you know, he was just saying sort of strange things. Like at one point during the Rousey match, he reminded everyone that she got knocked out in her last two fights, where it's like, yeah, that's why she's here. Like, she'd still be doing shoot competition if she could win them. He was all over the place, and also like kind of muted, like not super enthusiastic, which was like a weird thing, because Cole's always going, you know, Mach 5, and Graves is pretty good, but coach was just sort of like a sort of milquetoast middle ground, I guess.
Did you watch the NXT show right before you started watching WrestleMania, though?
I watched the NXT show on Saturday night, yeah.
Oh, okay, because I watched it right before I started WrestleMania, and so listening to anyone after listening to Mauro Ranallo is... everyone on the planet seems muted after listening to Mauro for 3 hours.
Mauro is like, you know, Mauro, like, they, if Johnny Gargano puts someone in a headlock, they'll be like, oh, what a plate of bolognese Gargano just put. It's just like, Jesus, Mauro, like, stop making metaphors, dude.
I think you're thinking of John Sterling's call for Giancarlo Stanton.
I wish John Sterling and Mauro could have called the Ciampa Gargano match. That would have been incredible.
I promised you no baseball, and I got to baseball within 5 minutes.
It's all right.
I won't do it again.
John Sterling is bigger than baseball.
That's true. And Mauro Ranallo is bigger than wrestling. So it goes both ways. Charlotte and Asuka. A match of the undefeated Asuka versus Charlotte, who's like 27-1 on pay-per-view, seemed like it was going to be a coronation for Asuka, and instead, Charlotte tapped her out, kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah, they didn't work Asuka's leg at all during the match, which, you know, not to be like too like Jim Cornette, but like, you know, if you're going to tap her out, work her leg, you know, because then at least like you're telling a story of Charlotte, you know, won for a reason and not just like, oh, she put her in her finish and she, I don't know. That's just like a little thing. It was a good match. I really enjoyed it.
For sure.
You know, Charlotte is just like a fantastic athlete, you know, can do things that, you know, I haven't seen, you know, very often in the ring, like that Spanish fly that she did off the top rope was the rare Spanish fly that actually looked kind of realistic and not like, you know, two people jumping together, but like looked like she was actually doing the move, partially because Asuka didn't get a great rotation and almost died. but yeah, it was a good match, you know, and it seems pretty clear that, I mean, I don't know if it's pretty clear, but like they had to make a choice if they were going to build toward Rousey and Charlotte or Rousey and Asuka. And they seem to think that Rousey Charlotte is the bigger match. But I don't totally know, I guess, where they go with either of them in the intermediate future. Maybe, you know, Asuka goes after Nia's belt. I don't know. It was good. I don't totally know where they go from here with it.
Yeah. I mean, I like the match a lot. It did seem, it just wasn't what I was expecting, just because the whole match you're building to Charlotte basically getting tapped out, her shoulders being worked over the entire match. She's in pain. And then she did a one-arm bridge to that figure eight, and then she was just like, okay, well, I'm going to tap out now. You know, that was the end of the match. And it didn't seem like it actually impacted her at all, which was, I mean, it's fine. Like, you can say, okay, she overcame the injury. That's a reasonable story, but I was just surprised. And I don't blame them. I do think that Charlotte and Ronda Rousey could be an enormous match if they play their cards right. But I do think that, you know, ideally, I think the two best women in the company are Charlotte and Asuka. And so I think ideally you want to have them both ready for big matches against Ronda at some point.
Yeah, I think, the argument is probably that Rousey needs to be in the ring with someone who's pretty smooth, and Asuka's a little choppier and a little more realistic, and with someone who doesn't totally know what they're doing, that could be cool or it could be super awkward. And also it's Vince. So, it's not hard to understand why he would go with Charlotte Flair as his, top female, superstar, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It certainly seems plausible. So, as Charlotte's celebrating, which was a little strange, they did it this quickly. So as Charlotte's celebrating, the ref walks over to tell John Cena, who's been sitting in the crowd this whole time, that the Undertaker is backstage. And so John Cena pops out of his seat, jumps over the rail, nearly runs over Charlotte, sprinting up the ramp to go backstage. On the Wrestling Observer recap, I believe Dave and Brian speculated that John Cena had to go to the bathroom. And
I think they were actually talking about another time he left his seat earlier in the show. Yeah, Brian said he saw him leave earlier in the show, but then come back. So I think this was actually an angle, not John Cena just sprinting to the commode in the back.
Okay, so let me ask you this, though. Let's say John Cena did have to go to the bathroom, during the first match. What does he do?
I think that was what happened, is he got up with security, and they, took him to a bathroom in the, inside the arena, and he used it.
So he had a security escort to the bathroom.
He had a security escort to the bathroom, yeah.
What was your alternative theory going to be?
There's devices, I guess, that could be used. I don't know. You'd have to think that John Cena, who is an elite sort of performer, would have prepared for this sort of situation, and they would have planned this out. But who knows, Your bladders are a strange thing.
It's very true. Very true. The next match, Bobby Roode versus Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton versus Rusev. I will not pretend that I paid a ton of attention to this match.
Do you think, is it a fair comparison to say that Randy Orton is like the Jay Cutler of wrestling?
This is very interesting. Explain your comparison, then I'll let you know if I agree with you.
I mean, supremely physically talented and just openly disinterested in the entire process and sort of mocking everyone, while he's doing it.
That totally checks out. Have I told you my Randy Orton story before?
I don't think so.
Oh, so in a former life, I used to work at IGN, the video game website, and there was one year we interviewed, we went to WrestleMania, we interviewed a bunch of wrestlers, and most of them were super nice, very chill, just wanted to help out. Some of them were drunk and were, friendly, but not, didn't cause us any trouble. And everyone was, out of character, acting like normal people. Randy Orton shows up, decides to be either in character or just a dick the entire time. At one point, starts bragging about how he's getting paid $250,000 for WrestleMania. And in my head, I'm thinking about, I know how much WrestleMania, what the gate is, what the pay-per-view numbers are. You're making a good amount of money. You're more than certainly I am this year as an IGN employee. But, you're not making that much money that you necessarily should be bragging about it without being prompted in a moment where you're supposed to be out of character.
Well, he lives his gimmick. I mean, I think they found a good gimmick for him. It's just, sort of a D-bag.
When was the last time you remember really enjoying a Randy Orton match?
I mean, Randy Orton stinks is sort of the thing. Every time, someone talks about, Randy Orton has a cool finish and then he stole from, Diamond Dallas Page. And other than that, he's not good at all. And he's reached the point now where he's openly mocking people who try. I tend to fall more on the traditional side than the Will Ospreay side, but he's just mocking Will Ospreay for trying hard and putting his body at risk. And it's sort of Will Ospreay matches, while they look choreographed, are way more entertaining than Randy Orton matches, which are just like headlock, his dumb DDT, that the power slam, and then like the, you know, and his finish. And so like, I don't know. I don't think he was ever particularly good. He's always had a good look. He's got a good look and a cool finish, and Vince likes him, and he's made millions of dollars from the wrestling business. So God bless him.
Is it wrong to make a comparison between Randy Orton and Eric Hosmer?
No. Eric Hosmer's like, one, is a very nice young man. Two, has won a championship. You know, unlike Orton, who like tanked every, you know, main evented WrestleMania 25 and it was horrible. And Hosmer, like, you know, is generally considered pretty good at baseball. I mean, you know, he's kind of, I guess, been overrated over the years, but like he's had some good seasons at the very least. Like can you think of one good one-on-one Randy Orton match?
I can, but it's kind of cheating because it's the Brock Lesnar match where Brock Lesnar literally like legitimately goes to a concussion.
Well, that wasn't even like a good match. It was just like an interesting finish.
To be fair, last year at this time, he was having that match with Bray Wyatt where there were maggots projected onto the ring. So this is a lot better.
Gosh. I was watching when, you know, like he took some hard chops from Bobby Roode. And the whole time I'm thinking like, man, Bobby Roode is going to open his suitcase on Tuesday and find someone's taking a dump in it. Like, you just know that there's a payback for, you know, like, he took a superplex, and I was like, wow, Vince must have paid him, like, $50,000 to take that. Like, there's no way that was for free.
No, absolutely not. I think he has a job for life now because of the Brock Lesnar thing. So, I mean, I'm sure he's not going to be taking a lot of heavy bumps over the next 20 years as he's competing in the middle of the card at WrestleMania. I don't understand the Jinder Mahal thing, and here's why. I don't mind Jinder Mahal in a vacuum. I don't mind the idea of, you know, appealing to the Indian market when it comes to Jinder Mahal, and that's clearly what they're trying to do. But if you're going to try and make an Indian superhero, which is the case with Mahal, why are you making him a bad guy? Like, just have him be a good guy who happens to be from India, and then he'll actually be a hero as opposed to a dude who's cheating to win.
Are you familiar with the booking history of Vincent Kennedy McMahon? tell you what, you should Google Kamala Quang or Papa Shango or any of these sort of, you know, like obvious sort of racial stereotype. And Google, you know, men on a mission. If you want to know for how, you know, the WWE handles these sorts of things. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, their standard thing is they have the anti-American heel or sort of the, you know, the scary foreigner, I guess. And this one is like slightly, you know, less offensive, but still sort of like silly. I don't know. I understand, I guess they're trying to open up the market in India, you know, so that makes some sense. It's just Jinder's okay. To me, the biggest disappointment in this match was Rusev was not nearly as over as I expected him to be. You know, like after watching the Royal Rumble, when Rusev was like, seemed like one of the two or three biggest guys on the show, the fans were not as crazy for him as I expected, which I guess, you know, makes sense that they didn't put him over. But I was, you know, I don't watch like Raw every week, so I kind of just check in and out on like the big events. And it seemed like he was super over 3 months ago, and then here he was just kind of over. I don't know. It was weird.
Well, it's, I mean, they haven't given the fans any reason to continue to believe in Rusev now.
I guess. I mean, I don't know if they gave him, like, it was, I thought Rusev Day was just something he made up on his own and then sort of got over. And so maybe they would, you know, strap the rocket to him, as they like to say. But it seemed like, yeah, I don't know. He seems to be hurt by the 50-50 booking and all that stuff.
I think it's the opposite, where because he came up with Rusev Day and got that over, they're like, you came up with something that we didn't come up with, so we don't like that, so we're going to pretend that doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, they made shirts. I don't know. They're always like, there's no logical through line into like when they back their own guys, you know, their own stuff versus stuff that gets over independently. Like sometimes if, you know, something gets over independently, they'll go with it, you know, and then sometimes they, you know, like the Yes Movement, they like finally acknowledged that in, you know, before the match the other day, that like everyone in pro sports was doing that move in 2014, when in 2014 they never acknowledged that, which was very strange.
Funny how that works. So next match, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, Triple H and Shooter Stephanie McMahon versus Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey. The entrance to this match from the Triple H and Steph, it was supposed to be intimidating, I guess, but it was, they didn't have enough space. There were like six people, like four women, and then Steph and Triple H on choppers, on motorcycles, but there wasn't enough space to go fast. So it was like a really slow procession of choppers going about 5 miles an hour down the ramp.
Yeah, I think this was something that seemed a lot cooler in theory than it looked. Triple H had a nice bandana over his face, which was very intimidating, but they never really, you know, they never really focused in on it. And then we got to see the great, like Triple H spitting the water is like a truly cool thing, like as dumb as it sounds. But with Stephanie doing it next to him, it sort of offered a reminder of how stupid it is. You know, it's like, oh yeah, because like she didn't game face it the way he did. She just looks like she's spitting water, whereas he, you know, has that whole like double inhale type thing and gets a second sort of burst, and he makes it look cool. But then it offered a reminder, like if you were in college and you did that at a party, you'd be like the biggest idiot in the room. So it was reminder to not try any of this stuff at home.
I mean, imagine if you were at a party and you did the Stone Cold Steve Austin thing where you knock two beers together and then pour them over yourself. You'd feel like, great, now I have to go change all my clothes because I'm covered in crappy beer.
Bill, I don't have to imagine that. I can just remember.
Oh, no. Oh, poor Andy. Poor Andy.
Poor 20-year-old me. If only he knew.
That's the whole point of being 20 years old, is that you don't know. You have to learn.
Exactly.
I thought this match was, given that part of the match was Stephanie McMahon blocking multiple submissions from a judo medalist and former UFC fighter, It went about as well as I could have imagined, and was about as good of a match as I could have hoped for.
It was awesome. You know, it was really well done. You know, again, despite the fact that Stephanie McMahon was beating Ronda Rousey in jiu-jitsu, you know, this has inspired me. I think I'm going to challenge Hoist Gracie to roll with me. You know, I'm 30 years old. I'm about 30 pounds overweight. I threw out my back last week eating a pretzel, but I think I can roll with voice, based on what I've learned from Stephanie McMahon, just sort of like, nope, I got the leverage here, honey, on Ronda Rousey. I mean, that was like, if there was a way they could have not done that in the match, I think it would have been like close to 5 stars, given the, you know, the challenges of it. You know, Triple H, who is still looks great, is definitely older. Stephanie's not really a wrestler. Kurt Angle just looks very strange at this point. You know, Kurt just bums me out, really. And Rousey was wrestling her first match, and they still put on something that was really fun and really entertaining and was super over.
Yeah, I mean, it was really well laid out. So the execution was not always there, but Ronda was great. Kurt Angle threw some truly horrific punches to start this match in terms of just a huge amount of space. Giving him some allowance for being a very old person. He had, what was on his hand?
Who knows? Kurt has had so many injuries and surgeries and incidents that I there's so many different options for why he had his hand taped up. It's, who can say, honestly.
Very fair. He might not even know why he had something on his hand at this point.
He might have just taped it up. Oh, it looks cool. America.
I mean, great match. Like we said, there was the weird part where Stephanie was blocking Ronda's armbar. The fact that she broke it up by sticking her thumb in Ronda's eye totally makes sense. That's totally plausible.
Yes.
You know, I thought, and this mentioned a little bit on Wrestling Observer show, and I agreed with it thinking about it even in advance of them saying it. I do think the best finish for this match would have been Ronda tapping out Hunter when they faced off towards the end of the match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would have, yeah, the roof would have come off the place if they had done that. And I think I can understand why they maybe wanted to save it. It's just unclear when they would use it again, you know, because it's a tough spot because it's not a one-off because she's a full-on member of the company now. So you don't want to burn everything you've got in the first match. It's unclear when they're going to be in a situation where she can tap them out. I mean, maybe it's SummerSlam this year, you know, they'll have a rematch. Hopefully she'll have a partner who like can walk and, you know, doesn't have a second, you know, head coming out of his neck. But God bless Kurt, but he should not be in the ring. I guess they could try it again later in the year, but, yeah, tough spot. I don't know. I would have preferred that ending, but I can understand why they didn't, you know, do that.
I think it would have made more sense just because you figure there's definitely going to be another Ronda-Steph match at some point in the near future. I don't know if there's going to be another mixed tag or another Ronda versus Hunter match, so I think this would have been their chance to do it. And then you say, okay, well, now Steph has a reason to keep wrestling Ronda. Whereas now that you beat Steph, like what's the next part of this story? I mean, is Steph going to get someone to get revenge on Ronda on her behalf? Is she going to attack Ronda? I mean, I don't know. We've already seen the payoff for Ronda versus Steph.
Yeah, and apparently on Raw last night, she broke her arm or whatever. So, I don't know. I don't know who they would even bring in, to work with her. So, it's kind of hard to see where it goes from here, moving forward.
Great match. I loved it. I really I've had no negative things to say about it. Otherwise, it was as good as they could have hoped for. Ronda, I mean, she has not been the smoothest person on the mic in terms of her, in terms of her first few appearances at the company. But I do think she's like, has incredible charisma. She's great in the ring. I hope they don't overexpose her. I hope they kind of keep her as a special attraction where she's not working every, kind of like working the Brock schedule where she's not working every month, but maybe working every couple months. But I mean, every reason to think she's going to continue to be an enormous star for the company going forward.
Yeah. I mean, there were little things that, cause she looked like in the ring, she looked a lot better than I expected. Cause the build had been pretty poor. There were some times, like there was a moment during the match where I think when Hunter pulled out the ref and Ronda leaned over and yelled at Hunter on the floor, like, "You're one of the biggest cheaters ever." And I'm like, "Oh no, like, man, they're going to need to put her with Heyman or something." I can just see in 2 months fans just openly booing, that sort of rhetoric, compared with, Stephanie, who at one point when Stephanie was laid out, Hunter came over and Stephanie just goes, "I'm glad you're here, honey." I was like, "Oh, they're so great together. They're so great. Like this is how it's done."
They're a couple that survived the years. They've been married in storyline for almost 20 years now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's truly impressive.
We're very old. I think that's really what's also impressive, how old we've managed to get. We're going to hit a break. We're going to come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. But first, guys, a very busy part of the sports calendar coming up. Major League Baseball just started. We've got the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs coming. And maybe you weren't really prepared to see your team compete in the postseason. Maybe if you're a Sixers fan, you weren't expecting to buy playoff tickets this year, but it happened to work out that you are going to have possibly a couple rounds of playoff games to go to. If you're a Cavaliers fan, maybe you weren't really interested in the first round of the playoffs, figuring that you weren't going to have much to worry about. Well, you might actually have something to worry about, given how the Cavs have looked this year. But no matter what you want to buy tickets to, whether it's sports, concerts, anything that involves you handing a ticket or showing your phone to someone who lets you into a venue, you can buy tickets for that event at SeatGeek. The partners of this show, of course, SeatGeek. You know them if you're listeners to the Bill Barnwell Show. They aggregate tickets from all over the web. Then they use their deal score technology to rate them. So you know you're getting a good deal. SeatGeek's going to give you reliable tickets. You're going to get into the venue. You're going to get great seats. You're going to know you're getting a good deal. And even better, you can get $20 off your very first purchase at SeatGeek if you haven't used it previously. Granted, listening to the show for a while. I can't imagine why you would not have used SeatGeek before, because they do such an incredible job. I haven't heard anything negative from people at SeatGeek. So many positive reviews coming to me on Twitter from people who have used the SeatGeek promo code. But if you haven't, this is your lucky day, because go to the SeatGeek app and enter in promo code Barnwell when you make your first purchase, and you'll get $20 back. Whether your ticket is $1,000, whether it's $21, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase by downloading the SeatGeek app and entering in promo code Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, today. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN, joined again by the Los Angeles Times and Sandy McCulloch. We're talking about WrestleMania, whatever. I don't know which number it is at this point. Do you know what number it is off the top of your head?
Only because I'm staring at the Wikipedia entry, I know it's 34.
Okay. I mean, it's the same thing with Super Bowl. Like, you could just make it the year at this point. I don't care which number it is. It's not that exciting anymore.
Yeah, I'm just glad they've kind of ditched the Roman numerals, because now I do, like, now I can, I don't have to, like, you know, feel bad about not paying attention to Latin class.
Did you have a Latin class when you were in school?
Yeah, I took 6 years of Latin, yeah.
What?
Yeah, I didn't know that I was going to be doing a profession where I needed to speak Spanish, you know, because I was going to be covering baseball. So in retrospect, this was a huge mistake. But yeah, took 6 years of Latin.
Do you remember any of it at this point? Like what have you held on to?
That's a good question. My Latin name in class was Caesar, but it's pronounced Kaiser.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it. We translated the Aeneid, I think, junior and senior year, but I wasn't really good at translation, so I just memorized the English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, stay in school, kids. Don't end up like me.
But so you took 6 years of Latin, and yet you don't recall enough Latin to translate Latin numerals into English?
I mean, I do, but, like, it's just kind of, you know, I can do it, but it's like, okay, X, V, I, give me a sec. Oh, 18. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's easier if I just see the, you know, the regular numerals.
That's a real shame. It's a real commentary on the school system in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah. The suburbs of Philadelphia. Yeah.
Oh my God. Let's move on before we just make some teachers cry. New Day, Usos, Harper and Rowan. This was always going to be a tough spot. I think just because people were so hyped after the Ronda match that, you know, whatever happened next was going to be a come down. And it was. I mean, it was not a great match. It was very uneventful. Felt bad for the Usos, who, you know, have consistently good matches. I've wanted to be in WrestleMania for so long. And then finally get on the show and they're in like a nothing 7-minute match where the Bludgeon Brothers beat Kofi Kingston to win the tag team titles.
Yeah, sort of a bummer because, you know, the Usos are great. The New Day is really good. And I actually, you know, I'm a big Harper fan. I think Harper's pretty good. And I guess Rowan's getting better. But the Bludgeon Brothers, they just look like such dopes in that gear that it's just hard to take them seriously. So, yeah, it's just kind of, you know, I get that they kind of had to do something in the middle. And this is why I would prefer that WWE would do the cards the way New Japan does, where they just put all the main events at the end so that, you know, they don't take, you know, like these guys could have had a good 10-minute match. And I know that wasn't the point. You know, the point was to get the Bludgeon Brothers over, but it's just so hard when, you know, they do this thing where they want it to like ebb and flow during the course of the night. And that's just, it's not a great viewing experience and it's not good for the talent. So I don't totally understand it.
I would also prefer that they copy New Japan by not having Eric Rowan on their shows. I think that would be a good thing.
By replacing Eric Rowan with Minoru Suzuki. Those would be the true Bludgeon Brothers, Harper and Suzuki.
Suzuki, Tanahashi, Okada, they were all in the crowd. You could have called any of them down to be in the match.
Brian Alvarez was talking about that, how when Braun was looking for a partner, he was tweeting where Suzuki was so Braun could go find Suzuki and bring him to the – that would have been incredible. Like, if they had just bringing out Suzuki – like, I don't know what his hair looks like these days or what sort of crazed, you know, gear he would have been wearing, but that would have been awesome. That would have been the only thing better than Nicholas, probably.
Nicholas was number one in the crowd power rankings, and number two was Noru Suzuki. Well, yeah, I mean, just a nothing match, kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
They don't, like, not really much of a point to having it on the card if that's what they were going to do. But whatever, you know, wanted to get them on the show. They were on the show. Good for them. So moving on. Good thing they had about a half hour to waste on this John Cena Undertaker match that ends up going all of 3 actual minutes. John Cena came out. Undertaker did not come out. Elias came out. He did a spiel. John Cena beat him up. They played it up too strongly that it was a disappointment. Like, they needed to react to it less on the announcing side to sort of make it a surprise Undertaker might come out. You know, but then Undertaker came out after some lightning gear. He spent about 7 minutes walking to the ring. They had a 3-minute match, and then the Undertaker hit John Cena with 1 tombstone and pinned him.
Yeah. Better than his match with Giant Gonzalez, but I'm not sure how much better.
Shorter.
At one point, the fans were chanting, "You still got it" at the Undertaker. It's like, you guys are lying. Just stop. Like, just stop lying. You know he doesn't. Otherwise, he'd be doing a real match. The Undertaker is awesome in so many different ways. He's done so many great things for the business, and was, vital in kind of shaping the business into what it is. But I really wish they would stop doing this. It was nice that they did the spot with Elias. Like, that was a cool swerve. I sort of paid attention to the buildup of, like, what might happen. And so I was kind of looking forward to the American Badass Undertaker coming out. Cause I'm just like, I'm over, the dead man entrance. It takes, as you chronicled last year, it takes him like 7 minutes to get to the ring. It's not, I guess live, it's interesting. Watching on, at home, it's really boring. It's just an old guy walking in the dark for a while. So it would have been a nice, like, sort of diversion to, they had Kid Rock there. I mean, they put him in their Hall of Fame. Like, I'm sure he could have, played whatever song he stole from Metallica, that they used the first time.
Well,
so
I have some bad news.
I don't know. What's that?
Kid Rock actually was not in attendance because he had to leave to apparently go get ready for the Kid Rock cruise.
Oh my God. We truly do live in the darkest timeline.
Is there a band you would go on a cruise with, or a band you would go see in cruise form?
Is there? I'm driving to, San Diego next month to see the Wonder Years. So, That's basically a cruise. I don't know. Maybe that's about it. Yeah, maybe I go see the War on Drugs on a cruise, but that would be a really weird cruise, probably. The boat would move very slowly.
There'd be so many dads on that cruise, though.
Yeah.
It would be the war on dads. I've gone distances to see shows. I have no problem with that. But, going on a cruise where you're going to see a band play for, an hour and a half, and then you're on the cruise for 3 more days, I don't get.
Yeah, I guess they do this with Van Halen at this point or whatever. It's like why middle-aged people go see the Eagles. It's not because they like the Eagles. It's because they just like remembering bands that they knew. But yeah, a cruise in general doesn't hold much appeal to me.
Right.
But, cruise with Kid Rock and Insane Clown Posse and, the members of D12 who are fighting with Eminem doesn't sound like a great cruise to me.
It doesn't. So Kid Rock was not in attendance. I didn't mean to correct you. I apologize, but he was not there. The thing I would say about the Undertaker match is this. If you're going to bring Undertaker back and you're going to do this, where you have him work a 3-minute match, you only get to do it once. You can't do this again, because next year, if they tease Undertaker versus anyone, we're going to sit here and say, what's he going to do? He's going to come back and work a 3-minute match. He's not going to be in shape to wrestle anyway. So you're not going to get excited about it. Whereas I think with years past, even if it was Undertaker coming back for one match a year, you kind of figured, okay, well, it's going to be a pretty good match with the right guy. So I do want to see what happens even after the streak ends. So I feel like this is probably his last appearance.
I mean, is there anyone you would actually want to see him work with at this point?
Let me think. Looking over the card, maybe Nakamura? I don't know.
Ugh. Fight the battle of who could do less. I think there's no one, really. Like, for me, at least. I don't know. I mean, maybe Nakamura, they could have an entrance battle, and then they could both collapse when they got to the ring. So I'm sure they will continue to use it because, you know, he obviously still likes doing stuff and they like using him. It's just, you know, ever since the streak ended, like, it's been a bummer every time I see him. You know, the streak was something unique about him and something special about him, and they took that away. I understand why they did it, you know, even if it might have been sort of a rash decision. But, you know, you can't pretend that, like, it has the same, you know, aura when he's going out there and, you know, wrestling Bray Wyatt for 8 minutes or something, you know, when the streak's not even on the line.
Yeah, but even if you have to have something, whether it's the streak, whether it's that he's going to have a good match, whether it's that he is a compelling character, you can't sell anything with him at this point. So I don't mind him coming back out if you're going to have him be like a surprise where he's going to, you know, do a walk-in. I was going to say a run-in, but that's probably asking a little too much. A walk-in is like,
yeah,
you know, Kane's getting beat up or something. But I just, this was the last meaningful Undertaker appearance, I feel like. And I don't know. I mean, like, what do you do with Cena at this point? Like, he spent this entire time losing matches, saying, I'm not going to be at WrestleMania. And then he lost in 3 minutes to a guy who is out of shape, who hasn't wrestled in a year.
I don't think we're going to see Cena for a while. I assume because he's going to just be doing Hollywood stuff. It's unclear if Blockers will be a good movie or not. I guess it could be. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're really concerned about what to do with Cena because they'll find someone for him to have an issue with in 6 months when he comes back. But, you know, to be honest, I don't think they should be really thinking about what to do with Cena anymore. They got bigger problems at the top of the card. They need to figure out who actually is, like, the guy in this promotion at this point.
Well, speaking of the guy who should be at the top of the promotion, Daniel Bryan wrestled with
Hoping you were going to say Shane McMahon.
Shane McMahon and his multiple injuries versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. As you mentioned, they finally showed, like, 4 minutes of clips of people around the sports world, around the entertainment world, doing the S chants that they didn't actually air when Daniel Bryan was wrestling consistently in 2014. This was a match where, strangely, I don't really understand why they worked it this way. Daniel Bryan got injured at the beginning of the match so they could have Shane McMahon, who has a legitimately suffering from diverticulitis, was in the hospital, I believe, as recently as last week. I still have a hernia, I believe. It's going to require surgery after the show. He worked pretty much the entire match for his side of this tag team match, which seemed like a wrong way to approach it.
The booking on this, I get the, like, you know, the theoretical idea. Oh, you take out Bryan, you know, you think that he's not going to be in there. Everyone knows he's coming back, but you build to the hot tag and then Bryan cleans house and wins. And, you know, that makes sense in theory. But again, Shane McMahon is like a 48-year-old man who was suffering from, you know, multiple internal injuries and was like broke into a sweat walking down to the ring, you know, like, and can't work to begin with. You know, his offense makes me think that maybe I could take him in a fight, you know, which is not a high praise. And so the stuff with Bryan looked great. It made me, you know, pretty excited to see him work. I was very concerned about, you know, whether he was going to be able to move and whether he was going to be able to bump. And I'm still pretty concerned going forward if, you know, he's going to be able to have like 20 to 30 minute classics like he used to. But it was a great, you know, moment and he looked really good. And I'm hopeful that, you know, they can kind of, you know, start positioning him for the title picture in, you know, on SmackDown if he's able to go.
The thing is, I love Daniel Bryan. I want him to succeed so badly. And I'm really excited to see him back, but I'm just constantly terrified every time he takes a bump that he's going to fall on his head or get injured. And I don't know if I'm ever going to get over that.
Yeah, I think that's a real challenge. You know, that's a real challenge. I think they tried to, in a way, I think by like just power bombing the crap out of him so many times already, mm-hmm. they're trying to basically tell you like he's okay, he can take bumps, like, you know, he's not going to get hurt. But yeah, and just knowing what you know, it does make it more difficult. It's unclear. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, you know, he retired, I guess, was it concussions or neck? Was it both? It was concussions. Yeah. Well, you know, those go away, right? Yeah, I don't know. Luckily, I don't watch that much wrestling, so I'll only have to think about this, like, at SummerSlam and, you know, whatever pay-per-views he's main eventing, but it's difficult. I mean, they should keep him off TV matches. They should, again, he should be on that, you know, Rousey Lesnar schedule where he is booking he's working a lighter schedule. But I think part of the problem is he just wants to work. The guy loves wrestling. And that's, you know, that's sort of what happened to Kurt Angle, is he loved wrestling so much that he just damaged himself to a level that's almost unrecognizable. And you just hate to see that happen to anyone, you know, Brian included.
Yeah. I would be really upset if that's what happened to Daniel Bryan down the line. And I think they're going to be smart about it. I don't think it makes sense to have him be wrestling every single week. We'll see. I mean, if he wins this Ultimate Royal Rumble at the show in Saudi Arabia, I think that'll be interesting to see how they position him. But I don't know. I mean, this is not a company that valued him as being the star of the company when they wrestled, when he was wrestling regularly in 2013 and 2014, where, you know, by the time after WrestleMania, he was the guy, but that was only because CM Punk quit and guys got hurt, Batista didn't get over. So, I mean, like, they haven't committed to him. So I'll be intrigued to see if a company where in the past when people have had concussion issues, they haven't committed to guys like that, if they're willing to do that with Brian, even though he's pretty clearly, to me at least, the most over person in the company right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have grown in some ways. I think what they've done with NXT has opened their eyes so that you can take these, you know, smaller guys, indie guys, and run with them. I mean, look, you know, AJ Styles is one of their two champions, you know? So they clearly have changed a little bit. You know, it's not like, you know, Brock's the champion on Raw and the champion on, you know, SmackDown is Sheamus. So they've grown in some ways. But yeah, I mean, one of the big issues, you know, leading into the build, we'll talk about this more, you know, with Lesnar and Reigns, but one of the big issues leading into Reigns and Lesnar a few years ago was that fans did not want to see Reigns. They wanted to see Bryan. And I think the company correctly chose Reigns over Bryan because they probably knew Bryan's physical issues. And so, you know, if they can maybe put him on a lighter schedule and use him properly, it could work. But if you want him to be that workhorse, you know, workers type champion, I don't know. I don't feel too great about that.
So let me ask you a question, given the reactions we've seen to Daniel Bryan and to Roman Reigns. If the WWE put them together as like a tag team and they constantly work together, would they be cheered? Would they be booed? Or would the reactions cancel each other out and they would get total silence whenever they came out to the ring?
I think it would turn into like the Miz and Damian Sandow dynamic, where fans openly boo Reigns, and when Bryan comes in, they, you know, like pop in like overly dramatic ways. So I think it would be a funny sort of experiment over the course of a month, but I don't think it would change the fundamental problem that people just do not want to see Roman Reigns as the, you know, the face of this company.
Okay, we'll get to that in a little bit. Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax, a match. I mean, nothing special. I thought the other women's match was significantly better. The other singles match with Charlotte and Asuka. I don't feel like I'm super into Nia Jax, and they don't position her in a way where I think she's portrayed the way that she should be portrayed. They seem to be, they're very like stop and start with her, where they'll push her, they won't get behind her really. And they got behind her here. The storyline's a little uncomfortable in terms of them basically positioning her as being outcast for her weight. And granted, she did win, which is nice. I think it's nice to have them overcome. But I mean, this is the same company that had Mickie James being bullied for her weight when she was not remotely overweight years ago, where they would call her Piggy James at an angle. And now she's on the other side of that story and criticizing someone else for their weight, it just seems like maybe it's just you should avoid this because you can't really tell this story in a way that's going to be appreciated by people one way or another.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, I don't know. It's hard to get behind this in really any sort of interesting way. Bliss seems like a good worker and she can talk a little bit. You know, Nia Jax is bigger than the average superstar, you know, female superstar, obviously, but, you know, she's also like a professionally trained athlete. So, right. Like, I, you know, it's like she could clearly work and she's clearly in pretty good shape. She just has different bone structure. I don't, yeah, I, whatever. I, it's hard to really get behind this. I think it's silly. I wish they could come up with a better, you know, angle than, oh, Bliss said you're fat. It's like, oh, great. Oh, right. Yeah, that's great. Let's have a championship match at WrestleMania over this.
Right. It just seems like there are so many things you can do with someone like Nia Jax that this part of the story just seems, it just doesn't seem like it's a testament to her abilities, where as opposed to just trying to sort of tell a story that you've told in the opposite direction so many times in the past. AJ Styles,
I think it's also offensive to actual fat people. Like, I blew out my hamstring last year, like, playing touch football at a bachelor party. Like, I couldn't do a top rope Samoan drop. Like, it's, you know, it's just rude.
As a fat guy, I was not especially enthused watching this match. I didn't enjoy it. I mean, you know, again, I think they're both talented. I think Nia Jax deserves better than this story.
Yeah, for sure.
AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, a match that was being portrayed in WWE as a dream match for years. We get to this match, and I don't know. The words I have written here are, is Shinsuke Nakamura the Albert Pujols of wrestling free agents?
Whoa, that is hot. That is a hot take.
I mean, this is a guy who was incredibly charismatic, had great matches, was treated as one of the best performers in the business coming out of New Japan, had a great match with AJ Styles on when they both left New Japan, right before they both left and came for WWE, got to NXT, had, I think, the match of the year he was there in Dallas. I had a show I was at that NXT show, and it was an instant superstar from the first moment he was on WWE television. What was the best match or the most interesting match or the best moment you remember from Shinsuke Nakamura since that match in Dallas against Sami Zayn?
That's a good question. Maybe his entrance at like his entrance at the takeover with the violin for the first time was probably the best moment. I mean, the Zayn match was, he had good matches in NXT. You know, it's not like they were bad. Like, he has some good matches with Joe. He had some good matches with Bobby Roode. But none of them have touched the Zayn match, and none of them come close to the stuff he was doing in New Japan. I mean, the theory is that, you know, one of the reasons he was willing to go to WWE is because he knew that physically he could not hang in the way that's required of, what they put Mako Kata and Tanahashi and Naito and Omega, those guys, he's just not physically at that class. And so he would have gotten pushed down on the card. But I think Nakamura to me is emblematic of a problem they're sort of having from NXT, where guys are getting over because the fans want people to be super over. And so a lot of times it manifests in their entrance. Like, so Nakamura at this point is a good wrestler who has a great entrance. And that's basically it. He doesn't really have, you know, this, like, I don't understand, like, how it manifests outside of, like, him doing, like, sort of, like, you know, like, sort of dancing like a wacky, waving, inflatable, and tube man. Like, where his, what his charisma is. You know what I mean? Like, his charisma seems to be he dances on the way in and he kind of, like, you know, flops his arms around. But, like, it's not like he cuts promos that really convey this. It's all physically based. And I don't know. I mean, I think he probably will work better as a heel. It's probably a good thing they turned him. But, yeah, there's just not a ton there, and the in-ring product doesn't really compensate for just the lack of, you know, storyline character.
Right. And, I mean, all that makes sense. If you did that, he was not physically up to the challenge at that point in New Japan, or he knew he was not going to be up to the challenge over the next 2 years, I buy that. He's been, you know, wrestling for 12 years before making the move. He was wrestling a very difficult style. He was the guy who had fought in MMA before. I mean, it makes sense he'd be beat up. And it makes sense that he would have learned a style in WWE that would have been a lot more calm, but would not require as much effort, was not as physical. But if he was ever going to have that match where you figure, okay, this is the guy we were expecting, this is the guy we figured was going to come here after the Zayn match, it would have been at the biggest show of the year with a guy he worked in New Japan who's having great matches up and down the card over the past 2 years. And I mean, this was an okay 3-star match. I mean, it was, you know, he pinned AJ pinned him with a Styles Clash, which I don't think he's pinned anybody else with in WWE.
No.
Tons of people have kicked out of it. It wasn't like there were a long series of near falls. It wasn't like there was a lot of stuff that makes you think, oh, wow, you know, that was a really brilliant spot they came up with. That was a near fall or a really brilliant counter or something I wasn't expecting or I hadn't seen before, where we know AJ's capable of that and has been for years. And Nakamura was that guy in New Japan, and he was that guy in the Sami Zayn match, but that was not the case in this match. There wasn't much of a story to it, and then it just kind of ended.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the series of matches that AJ had with Cena a couple years ago, and for as much grief as Cena gets, you know, for like he can go still,
sure.
And he can put on he can put on really great main event matches, and just from like the opening bell, you know, in one of those where AJ was countering everything Cena did and was just sort of embarrassing him, and just, you know, there was like an electricity to it, and this was just like two guys, you know, going through the motions of having a good match. It seemed like it was about 5 minutes shorter than it should have been. One really did much. There weren't, you know, many really big spots. It was kind of a bummer. I mean, I wasn't coming in thinking that they would do something on the same level as what they did at, you know, at Wrestle Kingdom a couple years ago. I wasn't that disappointed because I'm just kind of out on Nakamura. I mean, he's been really disappointing, you know, especially on the main roster. And they just don't know what to do with him. You know, he's basically an entrance. And now that he's a heel, does he even have his entrance? You know, they have to change his music, don't they?
You have to. I mean, if you're going to try and get him actually genuinely booed, you're going to take the stuff out that people want to see, which is his music, his entrance. But then, like you said, what else is there if he doesn't have that?
Right. Well, he has – his offense is heelish. It's more heelish than – you know, it's striking. It's, you know, sort of, you know, looks painful. You know, he doesn't do – he has more of a heel moveset. I'm not super familiar with his career in New Japan, you know, going back 10 years, but I think he worked heel for a good portion of that. I could be wrong.
Yeah, he did.
And so it seems like he would be better served – you know, just doing that sort of style where, you know, he's beating on guys rather than, you know, selling and flopping around and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm looking forward to it. I wish that in NXT that they were bringing guys up when they were ready and, you know, not when it was like, okay, it's WrestleMania season, got to bring up Nakamura. You know, we need to have Nakamura spend a full year in NXT. You know, we need to have Finn Balor spend 6 years in NXT. You know, I wish that they would just bring guys up when they're ready and when it makes sense rather than just based on what the calendar says, I guess.
Are you concerned about them manipulating service time?
Yeah, trust me, they really manipulated Balor's service time. They got like an extra 3 years out of Balor.
Yeah, that's important. And then you got hurt almost immediately after coming up, so that was great.
Exactly.
Timing.
It's like it's the same thing. You know, the revival was ready in 2016, and they brought him up last year, and one of the guys immediately got hurt. It's just like, and they're already dead. You know, so whatever.
Whatever. Speaking of whatever, Cesaro and Sheamus versus Braun Strowman and Nicholas. Anything you have to say about this match?
As dumb as it was, I do admit I enjoyed it. It was so stupid, though. It's just so dumb. I don't know. Of course, Nicholas is like the most over guy in the company now. That was like destined to happen, but it was funny. I don't know. I don't care about them dumping on Sheamus. I don't think Sheamus particularly cares, but I still do think there's more in the tank with Cesaro, and I wish they could find a way to, you know, get him more over as a singles guy.
Yeah. I mean, I was just happy that given Sheamus's history of injuring people that he did not manage to injure Nicholas. That was a genuine concern of mine.
Yeah, if there's one guy, I mean, other than like maybe like Mark Henry, I think Sheamus would be the guy I'd be most terrified of putting Nicholas in the ring with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wasn't upset. You know, I know that Cesaro deserves better. I would hope that Sheamus retires, to be honest with you. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm just not especially in on Braun Strowman. Like, I know he's big, but like in a company where you have a ton of big people, like I just feel like they would be in a much better place if it were Luke Harper in this spot as opposed to Braun Strowman.
Yeah. Well, Harper's obviously a better worker. I like Strowman. I find him to be amusing. He's got a good look. He's had some good matches. The one with Lesnar really sucked, which was a big disappointment. I am curious. I assume at some point this year they're going to put the title on him, and I will be curious to see how it goes, because I guess he's a babyface, which is a weird thing for him to be, but he's so over right now, and the crowd hates the guy that they want to be the top babyface that it's sort of happened, you know, naturally. I do, Strowman was a guy who, like, if you remember at the Royal Rumble a couple of years ago, like, Lesnar just, like, emasculated him, like, so viciously that you thought, like, you'd never see him again. And to his credit and to WWE's credit, they got him over and they made him into an interesting guy. It's just, like, the in-ring work is always going to be a bit of a problem, and it's always going to be a problem having credible opponents. So, and the ceiling is a bit lower than it would be with other, you know, other potential top guys.
Well, let's get to the top guy. Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. It happened again. We spent all year figuring that Brock Lesnar was going to overcome, Roman Reigns was supposed to overcome Brock Lesnar, finally get his victory, and then in an incredibly heatless match where the fans were literally chanting, "This is awful," Roman Reigns kicked out of 4 F5s. He bled profusely, and then Brock Lesnar pinned him. And we're back where we started 3 years ago when this entire process started. Roman Reigns has not gotten any more popular with the fans. Brock Lesnar is the same Brock Lesnar we've seen for years. He also, speaking to people who are having bad matches, has not had a good match now in several years, it feels like. And I don't know. I mean, Brock Lesnar supposedly has re-signed with the company. It's supposedly not a long-term deal. He reportedly has the right to possibly fight in the UFC during the short-term contract. So you figure it's probably about a six-month deal, but I don't know. I don't know what Vince necessarily was thinking. It seemed like the whole plan for years was to put Roman Reigns over, and it doesn't seem like that's really the case anymore at this point.
It's kind of amazing that, like, every year they basically build to putting Roman in as the guy, and every year, like, the day before WrestleMania, Vince is like, we can't do it. He's not ready. And you're like, yeah, dude, we've all known this for, like, 18 right. months. Like, why do you keep doing this? what really bugs me about this is everyone, you know, thought what they did at WrestleMania 31 was great. Everyone said, who saw it coming when Seth Rollins, you know, cashed in and ended that match. Now, go back and watch that match. They had Lesnar and Reigns had a very, very similar match to the one they had the other night. It was a little bit better. There was a little bit more variety, but it was essentially the same script. And it was crazy over. People were going nuts for the suplexes. That was when, you know, Lesnar first christened Suplex City. The fans were super into it. When Reigns made a comeback and it looked like he was going to win, the fans were horrified. They were so angry that it looked like Reigns was going to win. I mean, that mm-hmm. match was hot. That was white hot. And they ruined it. They absolutely ruined it by bringing in Rollins. It was a cheap pop that they had no way to build out of, and they could not. So they basically left that match with Rollins as the champion, who wasn't ready. And I know his reign got cut off because he got himself injured, but he wasn't ready to be the champion. They stalled out on Lesnar because Lesnar had been this unbeatable monster who they've been building up for a year. He broke the Undertaker streak. He destroyed John Cena. He was having great matches. He was really invested. And they basically put him on ice and took him out of the picture. And they still didn't solve the problem of how to get Reigns over. If they had had that match, if they had had basically the match they had the other night at WrestleMania 31, I think they would have at least been moving forward and deciding, okay, well, this is where we're going to go with Reigns. You know, he's going to have to rebuild or reboot or whatever. Or he might have even gotten over. You know, he might have even gotten over with the fans because he took such an ass kicking that, you know, that is what he finally earned their respect. But they cut that heat off. They just ruined all the possible heat they were building because they brought in Rollins to do it. And you look 3 years later, they still haven't figured this out. They still think Reigns is the top guy, but he's still not over. Lesnar's less invested than ever, and the fans hate him at this point. They're just sick of him. And meanwhile, Rollins is, you know, opening the show. Like, why? Like, it drives me bonkers that that happened. And it drove me bonkers after, you know, when it happened, because I knew this was how it was going to play out. I just didn't think it would take 4 years. I thought it would be like a 2 year problem.
Yeah, it feels like it's been an eternity where they've been trying to get Roman Reigns over, and it's been failing. So I don't know. At this point, when it comes to Roman Reigns, what would you do if you were Vince McMahon?
I'd send him home for 6 months. Like, I would get him off television. I would change his music. His music triggers fans in such a way. Like, I would do something new with his music. I would get him out of the tack gear. I would, like, put him – I would basically pay him to go away for a significant amount of time and try and rebrand him in every way you can. I mean, the way – you know, I know Jericho is an outlier because Jericho is one of the smartest guys who's ever been in the business. But the way Jericho goes away and comes back completely differently, you know, they have 1,000 writers. They need to figure out something new and figure out a way to try and – whether it's as a heel, whether it's as, you know – openly a tool of management, you know, whether it's as, you know, whatever, but just it's not going to work. This version of him is not going to get over. You know, they need to either heal him full time or rebrand him in a way that seems remotely fresh. But what they're doing, where he's going to win the title from Lesnar and then maybe drop it to Joe or something, is not going to work.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to work. I think for me, I mean, I think maybe you have Daniel Bryan win the title, and then you have Roman Reigns turn heel by beating Daniel Bryan and just lean into the heel turn, and then have Daniel Bryan chase Roman Reigns. So you have your least liked character as the heel champion, and then you have your most loved babyface character chasing him.
Yeah, that could work. That could work. I think he needs to go away. And I mean that like in not the like, you know, never come back, but like he needs to take time, and the fans need to stop seeing him every Monday come out and cut his goofy promos. It could work as a heel. They don't seem to be interested in that because he's already like the biggest heel in the company, you know, as a baby face. It's just, I don't know. I would send him home and just give him time to, you know, heal and give him time to come up with a new sort of direction. Cause it's just a bummer. Like, by all accounts, he's a nice guy. He's a good worker. You know, he clearly is trying. It just doesn't work. He just is not over. And at this point, it's like, it's more sad than irritating.
Do you feel like they're just going to continue on the same path for another year?
Possibly. I think, you know, what they probably should do is have, you know, if they're really going to keep the title on Lesnar for another year, and maybe have, you know, Strowman win it at SummerSlam or Strowman win it at WrestleMania next year or something. It would seem like Strowman would be the guy who fits both, you know, checks all the boxes for Vince in terms of size and also seems to be over with the fans. But, you know, if the main event at WrestleMania next year is, you know, Strowman the champion against Reigns the challenger, like, it's going to be treated just like this, where fans didn't even give this match a chance to change their minds. They were so openly out on it that it didn't matter what the guys did in the ring. It didn't matter how much, you know, Reigns was bleeding or how much, you know, punishment he took. They just didn't want to see it anymore.
So let me ask you then, if you had to say right now, what are the two biggest matches at WrestleMania next year?
I would guess Rousey and Charlotte.
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah, I'll say Strowman Reigns as the main event. Because I wish it could be like Daniel Bryan and AJ or something. But you know, when was the last time they put the two best workers in the main event? You know, well, like I can't even remember. You know, like even when it was like Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle, you know, that was like a mid-card match. Like they just don't, you know, the only time I can remember when they had like, you know, somebody even close to be WrestleMania 20, you know, and that was a three-way with Benoit, Triple H and Michaels. But like ever since then, it's, you know, it's Batista Cena, it's Orton Triple H, it's Rock Cena, you know, it was never like Punk and Bryan in the main event. So the match I would really like to see would be AJ and Bryan, but I would imagine the main event will be Strowman and Reigns.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think that is the most plausible couple of matches we're going to see. I mean, maybe you get Lesnar versus Bryan. Maybe you have that if Bryan's healthy. That match scares me significantly. But
yeah,
I have
like zero inch. I'd rather see Lesnar and Nicholas.
No, that's literally a crime, and I cannot endorse it when this name is on my podcast, or my podcast has my name on it.
You know what's going to be great is when they do Undertaker and Aleister Black, and the entrances are 15 minutes long, so Black can get squashed in 45 seconds.
Do you have any NXT thoughts before we finish up really quickly?
The show itself was great, like really awesome. I have really high hopes for Ricochet. I think Ricochet is like physically more impressive than any other wrestler I can really remember. So I'm hopeful that they can kind of, you know, get him working a little more realistic style. I thought turning Roderick Strong was awesome. I'm very excited to see what those four guys do together. You know, it's awesome seeing Adam Cole be super over. But every time I see him in the ring, I'm like, holy crap, he is so much smaller than everyone else. Like, I did not realize this. There's just no, like, it's just hard to see how they would use him on the main roster. Not a big Aleister Black guy. Don't like the ink, don't like the look, don't get what his gimmick is. You know, I can take or leave him. And I thought Gargano and Ciampa was amazing. Like, they're really great. Gargano is, if they can find a way to get Gargano over on the main roster, I will be like truly impressed, because there's a lot there and he can do so many different things, but I just think the size is working against him in a way that I'm not sure they'll figure out. I don't know. What did you think?
He reminds me of like a male Bailey, where I just feel like they have something very special and they're going to screw it up incredibly once he gets to the main roster. Like, he'll be on 205 Live as a mid-card guy on that show within 2 months. And that's not his fault at all, right? The way that they book people.
Right, right. Yeah, they'll bring him up. He'll get a huge pop when he comes up. And then like a month later, he'll be, you know, jobbing to Jinder. And yeah, then he'll be, you know, wrestling Cedric Alexander on 205 Live. Yeah,
poor guy. But it was awesome. I mean, that was a fantastic match. I like the show a lot. I'm a big Adam Cole fan as well. I think they can find a way to get him over, even as a small guy. He just has such natural, like, pure charisma that I feel like you put him with the right guy. You put him with a bigger guy who, not as a manager, but like, you put him with someone who's going to be physically imposing, who's going to back him up and kind of keep him from kind of like a Shawn Michaels Diesel thing. I can see that working really well if you put him with the right guy, because he's such a great talker, such a great look. And maybe the problem is the crowd likes him a lot. I don't know. Maybe it's going to be tough for them to boo him, but I feel like that whole stable is going to be very popular in NXT. And I think it might be, he could be the next example of a guy where, you know, he doesn't need to be in NXT for another year. I think he just has to be, I think he's ready for the main roster in the right.
Yeah, way. No, he should be on SmackDown, you know, tonight. Like, he's ready. I get that they want to give him a bit of a program, and they're probably not. I didn't understand why they brought in Roddy as a face to begin with. He's so clearly a natural heel, but maybe they just weren't sold on that. So I don't know if they're ready for Roddy to be the leader of that stable. But, yeah, I mean, Cole is ready for the main roster now. It's just, I think they're going to give him like a full year and a half down there to tell a story and waste all the stuff they could do on the main roster before they bring him up.
All right, well, until next year, Andy, please plug your various internet properties.
I work for the Los Angeles Times. I cover the Los Angeles Dodgers. You can read all the coverage at latimes.com/Dodgers. And you can follow me on Twitter at McCullough Times.
Where you only tweet positive things about the Los Angeles Dodgers.
They're doing great. You know, one day they might get hit a home run again.
So might WWE. So
indeed.
Might WWE. Andy McCullough, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
All right. Thanks for having me, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to our guest, Andy McCullough. And we're going to come back, I believe, next week. I don't think we have a second show this week. But next week, probably some pre-draft coverage. We're almost 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. I wrote a couple things about quarterbacks this week and how difficult it is to scout them and develop them. I think if you're a fan of the teams drafting in the top five, you probably know how difficult that is, but I'm sure we'll have some more football coverage and some more NBA playoff stuff coverage coming as well in the weeks to come. So thanks so much for listening, and more audio coming next week.